has not quite appreciated the sound of the conference over the past year. 1 year ago, with all of you knowing and living it, we were basically facing an education catastrophe. The economy was in the worst shape since the Great Depression. States and districts across the country were facing unprecedented budget shortfalls. And then one estimate suggested that 500,000 education jobs were at risk. Beyond education, the country was losing 700,000 jobs a month in the presence of office. The value of homes and retirement nest eggs across the country were plummeting. That followed a decade in which wages were stagnant and the cost of health care and education both rose. Today, things have gotten better. We avoided that education catastrophe. States have reported to us that the Recovery Act either saved or created over 300,000 education jobs. And that's a conservative estimate. And across the country, the job market has improved. But we all know we're not where we want to be, not as a country, and not as a profession in education. But things are improving. The president is working to rebuild the economy on a new foundation, one that provides middle-class families the economic security they want and that they deserve. Education is the cornerstone of that foundation. The president believes that we need to educate our way to a better economy. The country that out-educates us today will out-compete us tomorrow. Even in the midst of this recession, 61% of employers say they can't find qualified candidates for currently vacant jobs. Those jobs in fields like healthcare, computer science, accounting, and engineering. All of those jobs require an associate's or a bachelor's degree, or at least a professional certification. Our high school graduates aren't ready to do those jobs. In fact, some research suggests that high school graduates aren't ready to succeed in college. One estimate says that 60% of college freshmen, 60%, aren't ready for college work, and they have to take at least one remedial course. We can't allow this to continue. We're lying to children when we give them a diploma, and they're not ready to succeed either in college or in the world of work. We need to improve at every stage of the education continuum, in early learning, in K-12, and in college. Our country's economic security depends on it. The president fundamentally understands this. Last year, he set an ambitious goal for America. By the end of the decade, by 2020, we will once again lead the world in college completion. A generation ago, 40% of our young people earned college degrees. That was good enough to lead the world. And we've held steady over time, but 10 countries have passed us by. Simply put, while we have stagnated, they have accelerated progress. For us to join the leaders in the world, we need to raise the college completion rate from 40% to 60%. That will require an additional 8 million graduates with a 4-year degree, a 2-year degree, or a professional certificate. The president is committed to getting there, and nothing demonstrates that commitment better than the budget that we released today. At a time when other government spending is frozen, the president is investing in education because he understands that education is the path to economic security in the future. He's investing heavily at every level, from early education to K-12 reform to college access. It's a cradle-to-career agenda, one that starts at birth and follows children every step of the way, with the ultimate goal that they graduate from a 2-year or 4-year college. But this budget isn't only about money. It's also about changing the way that we work here in Washington. It shows that we're committed to reauthorizing the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, and you know that today is NCLB. I'll always give credit to NCLB for exposing the achievement gap in advancing standards-based reform. But you all know it's many, many problems. It has allowed, it has even encouraged states to lower standards. It's encouraged teachers and schools and school districts to narrow their curriculum. It relies on simplistic tests that don't accurately measure what the students are learning. And it mislabels schools, even when they're showing real progress on important measures. We want ESEA to support states that are raising standards, not lowering them. to reward success, and to redefine the federal role. One of our goals of reauthorization is to give local educators the flexibility and the room to do what's best for children. We don't have a Quality and access on the key goals for our early childhood agenda and our financial aid agenda. Our K-12 agenda can be summed up in one word, that's reform. We're making a big philosophical and strategic change for these grants. We're moving away from basic formula grants, where everyone gets a little money, to more competitive ones where we can support people doing breakthrough work. We want our scarce resources to leverage dramatic change, change that will accelerate progress for decades to come. We've seen that happen in the past year in the Race to the Top program. We put $4.35 billion on the table, and people started to change their business. States responded by changing their teacher evaluation systems and improving conditions for charter schools and holding them to a higher standard of accountability. I'm for expanding the number of charters, but only if we grow the good ones and we shut down the bad ones. Teacher unions are increasingly willing to partner with districts on turnarounds, and I applaud their courage and their willingness to take on this work. In the fiscal 2011 budget, the president is proposing to add $1.35 billion to the Race to the Top program to offer a third round of grants. He wants to give us the option of including districts directly in that competition. I think the chance to fund districts directly is obviously a great idea. The president also wants to add $500 million to the I3 Fund, Investment Innovation Program. He wants to reserve $150 million for science, technology, engineering, and math programs. He also wants to give rural schools a competitive advantage in the competition because he understands the challenges they face. The goal of the Race to the Top and Investment Innovation Funds are to reward applicants that have the courage, the capacity, and the commitment for reform. Fancy presentations, quite frankly, don't interest me. They don't excite me. The real progress for children is what we absolutely care about. We'll be introducing competition to other programs, focusing our grants on the most important issues facing education today. We want to help your districts develop and recruit great teachers and principals. Nothing is more important than getting a great teacher into every classroom, a great principal into every school. We'll invest in the best preparation programs. It doesn't matter if it's through a traditional route or an alternative one you set up. We're going to invest in the ones that have the data showing they're doing the best work. We want to make about a five-fold increase in principal leadership. You think principals are CEOs today? We think there are no good schools in the country without good principals? We think our department is historically dramatically underinvested in principal leadership? We're trying to right that in this year's budget. We want you to give teachers incentives not just to join the profession, but to stay in. We especially want you to put your best teachers in the schools, in the classrooms, where they're needed most, where the challenges for the children are the neediest, and the challenges are the toughest. Historically underserved communities deserve better, and we must give it to them. I said repeatedly that if we're serious about closing the achievement gap, we have to close the opportunity gap. We have to give children who need the most help. Show us the best literacy programs in the country and tell us how you'll make them better, expand them, and take them to scale. We want you to expand and improve your science, technology, mathematics, and engineering programs so that all students are succeeding in them. Our country's future economic security depends on it. And because NCLB narrowed the curriculum, we're looking to expand it again so that our children get a well-rounded education. The arts, foreign languages, and financial literacy. But once the NCA is finished, the president wants to add another $1 billion for a new fund to reward high-performing, high-poverty schools, to support works to improve assessments, and to expand and improve after-school programs. Between the budget the president announced today and the work we're already doing thanks to the Recovery Act, this has been an extraordinary first year in education. But the fact is, the changes we've triggered haven't begun to impact every child. And before they do, These changes are going across your collective debt. Unless you show the courage and the will to make the tough choices on behalf of children, these investments we're proposing will not change enough lives. Unless you demonstrate the capacity to bring together all the adults in your school districts, teachers and administrators, unions and parents, and overcome the divisions and disagreements that impede progress, these investments will not have maximum impact. So today, on behalf of the President, I want to appeal to you directly to find it within yourselves to lead this movement for education reform. I know this is hard work. I know we're asking tremendous amount from you. But the urgency, as all you know, has never been greater. Our children and our future are at risk. And so let us together do the difficult but necessary things that our schools demand and our children deserve. I thank you for all that you have done and all that you will do to make education America's highest priority and our collective greatest legacy. Our nation's children are incredibly lucky to have you as their champions. Thank you for your service. Not for any questions. Better. You want to unpack their resources. was out of right field, we want to invest heavily in effectiveness. That's the principle, that's the philosophy.
Secretary Duncan, my name is Mark Warren with the Houston ISD, and I want to thank you so much for being, first of all, I think just a great leader for the Department of Education and taking us into the new age. I think you've done great things so far. The second thing is that I want to thank you very much for listening to the concerns of the Houston ISD.
Your question, sir.
For being able to apply directly to the Department of Education for raising the top funds. And I wonder if you could just tell us, give guidance to us here in the room, how to do that, if you could.
Yeah, very great question. And so I said repeatedly, this is a complicated one. I come from Chicago and from what is arguably the most gubernatorially challenged state in the country. So I understand the challenge of working states. I also understand that we're running right through, you need real reform at state level and at the district level. And so what we're proposing is this next generation of Race to the Top for $1.35 billion. If Congress approves that, we want districts to be able to apply directly. And I spoke to your governor as recently as last week, and he and I have quite different opinions, that's okay. But I don't want good work that's going on in places like Houston to be held hostage. So where we have states doing great work, we want to support that. We have districts doing great work, we want to support that as well. There's nothing we need to do now. We need to get this passed. And this passed, what we'll be able to do is split the money going forward between districts and states, which could be used for the Race to the Top money. And then to be clear, all the other money, that's the Race to the Top. The destination that districts can apply directly for across the neighborhoods, district directly, school improvement plan grants, $3.5 billion, support the best of us. We've never been this many opportunities for folks to put the best foot forward. We encourage all of you to actively pursue all of these opportunities, not just the rest of the time.
Mr. Secretary, Martha Rice from Yamhill, Washington. We're in South Central Washington, a district of 15,000 students with a free and reduced lunch percentage of 81% of our students. We've been notified that four of our schools are in Tier 1 and will be required next year to apply for school improvement grants. One of our partners here today has been notified that seven of their schools will be required. Our question is, because of things that are happening in our state, is there any flexibility in the transformational model parameters that would allow for local needs to be met, where you might have a principal that's working very hard and really making progress, but the model requires that the principal be replaced? How much flexibility is there in that model that would allow us to meet our local needs?
It's a great question. We try, they have four different models, and the fourth model is trying to provide some real flexibility. Let me be sort of clear on this one. But what we're trying to say is that I put schools in sort of three different buckets. I'd say the top 10% of schools in the district and the state are really world-class. They're schools that anywhere in the world can be proud of. There's a set of schools in the middle that may not be world-class yet. Improving each year, we're going to give those schools maximum flexibility to continue to improve. What we are saying is let's not take the 99%, but literally, let's take the bottom 1% of schools nationally. Just that 1%, we have about 100,000 schools in the country. Bottom 1%, 1,000 schools, that by whatever measure, we have a long, long way to go. Let's not just tinker around the edges there. Let's do something fundamentally different for those children. Just to give, so I don't know your specific school, I don't know how they match up in the state, but it's a small number. Let's just give you a quick fact. We talked about 1.2 million dropouts. We have 2,000 high schools, not that many, 2,000 high schools in this country that produce half, 50% of our nation's dropouts. Those 2,000 high schools produce 75% of the dropouts from the minority community. Our young African American and Latino, our young boys and girls. Something for me is fundamentally wrong there. I think we need ways to pass it to sort of set the status quo. And what we're saying is that's more important than that. We want to transform those schools. We want something to manage better for those children in those communities. We want to do it with a real sense of probably not been a bottom up set for a year or two or three. Often been for one, two, three decades. It's not just chose entire neighborhoods. We're despite our best efforts, despite our hard work, asking for perpetuating poverty, we're perpetuating social failure. So we are asking people to challenge that status quo, that can be tough, not in the 99%, but in the bottom line.
Secretary Duncan, you stated at a mayor's meeting last year that you would not be satisfied unless at the end of the tenure there were more urban school districts that were taken over by mayors. Can you clarify your position on mayoral control of schools? And secondly, can you point to any empirical data that shows that when mayors are in control of schools, that there's just outstanding academic
programs, $210 million. So what we did with a number of places is consolidated 38 different programs to 11, but then added money to those. And so there literally is an additional $45 million. We can get you in the car and walk you through all the numbers and make sure you can understand that. But the goal is that I couldn't understand more clearly that children aren't safe, that they can't see the blackboard, that they're not fed, that they can't get to and from school safely, that they live in fear, our children can't learn. And we're trying to significantly increase the health and vitality of the environment, not just in school, but the community around school, so children can think about biology and maybe not.
Very great. Thank you. Thank you.
Question, the last question in the back line. Secretary Duncan, Fred Deutsch, South Dakota. I have a real question. You said the president wants to give rural schools a competitive advantage because he understands the problems they face. We're real concerned in South Dakota about our ability to compete for competitive dollars. Can you give us some detail about what we may encounter?
Three things we're thinking about. One is in something like the Investment Innovation Fund, where we talked about matching funds. We know that's particularly 50%, 100% match. We know that's particularly hard in rural areas. So there's undue hardship. We can waive that. We are also, I'll tell you, working with a number of national foundations to increase their giving in rural communities. And we think there's been a real underinvestment there. We're trying to bring in private sector money. The other two ways we do it, we're thinking this through, and each of these different pots of money we're thinking about. One is to do exactly what I said, to create a competitive advantage. The second thing would be just to do a set-aside for rural communities, have rural communities work on that money by themselves. So there's a couple of different ways to do that, but I promise you, every single opportunity, every single funding program we do, we're going to find a way to make sure the rural communities aren't left out.
Thank you.